Welcome to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. I am Jamie Dodd, joined today for the full 3 hours. That's how you know it's a big show, by my co-host, Canucks insider Thomas Drance, who also covers the team for The Athletic. Canucks Talk is brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at DLEAMC.com. We are coming to you live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? JanPro, the leaders in commercial cleaning and janitorial. If your workplace demands a clean environment, contact JanPro for a free, no-obligation quote. Visit JanPro.ca. What's going on, Drance?
Not much, buddy. Game 7!
Game 7!
Let's go!
Holiday Monday, but sure doesn't feel like a holiday.
What's better than this?
The stakes of this one tonight, and shout out to everyone, by the way, listening. If you have the day off, if you're still working, thank you for making us a part of your day. Yeah, and as I said, like, normally you're doing a holiday show, and you're a pretty kind of quiet, sleepy day on the show. Not as many listeners, not as many texters. Not going to be the case, I expect, today, because, man, first Game 7, technically since the bubble, first Game 7 in a non-bubble environment since the 2011 Stanley Cup Final for the Vancouver Canucks, Trancer.
Oof.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry to go there. It's just factually true. Facts only.
100%. Okay. And, yeah, I mean, this is a big one. This is a big opportunity for this team. You know, we know the context. We know that the news yesterday around Brock Besser was deflating, especially for Canucks fans.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, there's a lot of nervy listeners with that, you know, pit in their stomach feeling, nervous, agonizing about the game tonight. And fair enough, that's the beauty of playoff hockey. Like, embrace that feeling, embrace that anxiety as a fan, just because it doesn't come around very often. As you said, it's been 13 years,
mm-hmm.
13 years since Canucks fans woke up on a Canucks playoff game day and had this, well, it's do or die. Oh my God, these stakes are huge. It's going to be so much fun tonight, man.
And on that note, let's get right into the whiteboard for today.
All right now, fellas. Hey, let's focus up, huh?
It is your daily deep dive into what's up with the Canucks for today, May 20th. We'll start with the headlines. And of course, it is Game 7 between the Canucks and the Oilers. Final game of the NHL's second round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. A place in the Western Conference Finals on the line tonight. Of course, the Canucks had the 3-2 series lead. They lose 5-1 in Edmonton on Saturday to set this one up. I want to talk a little bit about, you know, more about the stakes and kind of some of the emotion in this one, obviously beyond just that place in the Western Conference Finals on the line. But, you know, we have lots of time to get into all of that later on in the show. Of course, the other big headline, as you mentioned, Drancer, that bears some discussion here. Brock Besser will not be a part of Game 7 for the Canucks tonight. He is out with a blood clotting issue. Irfan Gafar first reporting it yesterday. Since then, Elliot Friedman and others have confirmed. So you kind of start, obviously, just with the human level of this one, right? And first of all, reports there that the issue isn't serious or career or life-threatening for Brock Besser, which is incredible, the most important thing.
Yeah, he's okay is what I've sort of been told by sources close to the player.
So that's fantastic news, right? That's kind of first and foremost. But even beyond that, at a human level, you just feel absolutely terrible for Besser, right? Like, dream regular season after a couple of years where it had been really, really tough going for him in Vancouver. Looked like he might not even be a Canuck for that much longer at certain points. Has the regular season he has, finally reaching that 40-goal barrier, and then just gets better in the playoffs, right? And has this just collection of incredible clutch moments. Really, you could argue the team's best forward in these Stanley Cup playoffs. And now he doesn't get the chance to go out there and battle with his teammates in, you know, the biggest game of their lives together, right? Like, this is the biggest game for this group. Brock Besser's the longest tenured member of this team, and he doesn't get to be out there with him. That's tough.
That's gutting. Gutting. And, you know, the amount of magic that has come off this player's stick over the course of this postseason run has been really something special. I mean, right from game one, like, he makes the low to high pass that leads to the Suter deflection and gets the 12 seconds of magic mm-hmm. going. He had a key battle won to set up that play, right? It's him and JT Miller seaming the Predators penalty kill that sort of smash and grabs game 3. We all know what happened in game four, a hat trick game with Brock Besser, you know.
2-6 on five goals.
2-6 on five goals. And what a play to tie it with 6 seconds. I mean, so much difficulty, so much good stuff that had to go right for him to get that play made, to like make that happen. And then he sets up the Pugh Suter series winner.
Yep.
With a beautiful feed. We know how game three went for Besser. We know that the shot that tied game four preposterously came off of his stick, right? He, once again, Brock Besser 6-on-5 gave the Canucks a shot in a game in which they'd been soundly outplayed to take a 3-1 lead in this series. That's like a career worth of playoff magic over the course of 2 weeks. Yeah. I mean, it's been incredible. So for a player who's been through all that he's been through, right? And this is a guy who came to Vancouver and was like a ray of sunshine on a very cloudy decade, right? Calder nominee, but has some injuries, durability issues earlier in his career. He eventually gets sort of like outshone, not just by Hughes and Pettersson, but by Toffoli and by Kuzmenko. He suffers an extremely painful personal tragedy and does so, you know, sort of in the public eye in a pretty unique way, right? Like, Besser introduced us to his family. His first Canucks game, it was Duke Besser who read the lineup, right? Canucks fans went through the emotional roller coaster in some ways with this guy, right? He is the longest tenured Canuck, but he's also a Canucks player who I think has connected with this market in a pretty unique way. You know, especially for those fans who have, you know, become attached to rooting for this guy, even when he's struggled, as he did as recently as last season when his two-way game fell off a cliff, right? Where, I mean, you remember the inbox anytime I'd defend Besser. It was like people were mad. He put it all together this year. He built himself into this. Like, this is not Besser's elevated his game. You know, I think you made a great point about this. The specific ways that he's improved at the net front with deflections, the low to high passes, the playmaking side of it, the wall work, the defensive reliability. He's built himself into a guy made for this time of year, made to play winning hockey at the hardest time of year. And his loss for a team that has, you know, taken less than 21 shots in 9 of 12 playoff games, right? That has not scored a ton. You know, it's massive, not just for tonight, but also for the club's wider cup hopes in the event that they're able to pull off a victory in game 7 over the Oilers. I mean, it's incalculable just how significant this loss is, because in some ways, like, whether it's, you know, the work that the Miller line with Besser riding shotgun has done in a matchup role, right? Like, he's contributed to what this team has done well against Connor McDavid in a major way. He's contributed on the power play. Like, he's been one of the few parts of the power play that I think you have some confidence in when he's shooting, when he's making plays. Obviously, the goal scoring, the shot generation. Like, Besser in some ways has been poking, you know, different fingers and digits into the wall as it's been, like, breaking. You know what I mean? Like, he's been stopping the leaks in some areas where the Canucks are sort of most at risk of sort of falling below a certain threshold as in terms of team quality, right? The shot generation, the scoring chance generation, the power play work. That makes this loss additionally significant, I think, in the wider context of this club's true talent.
And one other thing I always think about with Brock Besser in terms of, you know, him being the longest tenured Canuck, he's really the last bridge between the Sedin era of the team and this current era of the team. Now, technically, Thatcher Demko played one game in the Sedin's final season, but Brock Besser was a regular. That was his rookie year, and he's the only guy left from that team.
They played on the Sedin line.
Yeah, he's the only guy. So, like, he really is a bridge between eras of the team. And, you know, as you hit upon there, we're all going to focus on the goal scoring, and for good reason, right? Because of the team's struggles to score goals, because of Brock Besser's ability, leading goal scorer in the regular season, leading goal scorer in the playoffs. But let's not forget, he's been JT Miller's sidekick when it comes to shutting down Connor McDavid as well, or matching up at least with Connor McDavid. He's one of the team's best defensive forwards. And so that side of it is a huge loss as we kind of transition from the human side and just how difficult it is, a blow for Brock Besser to not be in this game tonight, to the hockey side and what it means for the Canucks. Yeah, the offense is huge, but that two-way reliability on the wing with JT Miller in a matchup against Connor McDavid is massive as well.
Well, and that's what's going to make it hard for Rick Tocchet to configure his lineup, right? So we know from the availability. I know. Well, let's just do lineup. That's okay?
Yep.
We know from Rick Tocchet's availability that Mikheyev and Lafferty are coming back into the lineup tonight. I think that's how you got to, like, both Lafferty and Mikheyev have played so many games for this team. They've been regulars. I don't think you want to go down in the event that this is the, like, this is your, you know, this is your everything game.
Mm-hmm.
This is your first must win of the season. Okay. Truly, it's must-win territory.
Your actual must-win.
Yeah. This is the first time this has been, the Canucks have found themselves in a must-win. Given what Lafferty and Mikheyev have contributed to this team all season, I think it makes sense for them to be in the lineup over a guy like Podkolzin, who's been a cameo or bit player, especially because, you know, that fourth-line magic that they found in Game 5 didn't exactly carry over into Game 6. So you've got Lafferty and Mikheyev coming in. I doubt that either is a one-for-one replacement for Brock Besser. There's no chance that the Canucks are going to look at it that way. I don't think. And however they take line rushes, right, and their practice lines yesterday would suggest that maybe they go sort of four different centermen, you know, like move Pugh Suter to center potentially and kind of fatten your lineup, which could make sense. If your goal is, let's keep this low scoring, let's make sure there's someone I really trust on the ice
at all times
to sort of carry a line or play center at all moments. You know, and we're going to try and grind out a narrow win here. Like, this is one game. Anything can happen. I mean, I can see why that makes sense. But no matter how they take line rushes, like, I can tell you right now, Vancouver's top six forwards are going to be Pugh Suter, JT Miller, Elias Pettersson, Garland, Joshua, and Lindholm.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And you're probably going to see him mix and match a variety of different approaches. Like, you know, Miller, if they're hunting the McDavid matchup with Miller, and I think they should, especially given that Edmonton tried to get away from that matchup on their home rink in Game 6, you're not going to then plug in some of those guys that Tocchet has shown us he doesn't really trust defensively, like Nils Höglander, onto the Miller line just because you need more offense, right? Like, that's the real loss with Besser, is Besser is a guy who can contribute to that shutdown game, but he's also a guy who can win those minutes, help you win those minutes. Like, I think we're going to see Pettersson there. I think we're going to see Phil DiGiuseppe, who has some chemistry with Miller,
who's
from the early part
of
the season. I wouldn't be shocked to see him there, just to give them a speed look. Sam Lafferty, maybe. Mikheyev, maybe. Although, does Mikheyev take too much scoring off the table? You know, I think there's a decent argument for that, although maybe that's not something the Canucks can afford to consider tonight.
You're going to have to use those guys, right? Like,
you can use them further down lineup. You don't need to tie them to your best playmaking forward in Miller.
But what I mean is that there's a certain number of minutes that have to go around, right?
Yep.
And, like, you can only load up Miller and Pettersson and Lindholm and the other guys you mentioned there, Garland and Joshua and Suter, so much. Like, Mikheyev and Lafferty are going to have to get minutes, whether it's alongside JT Miller, whether it's with another center, whatever the case is. Like, the bottom six is going to have to give you at least survivable minutes, right?
Yep.
Even if you don't trust Mikheyev, and why would you at this point to play an offensive role alongside JT Miller? Like, you got to find the role somewhere for him. He's not coming into the lineup to play 5 minutes. He's going to play a little bit.
One thing to consider here, too, we always talk about team speed being fragile, right? And
mm-hmm.
and that you remove an average skater, even for a plus skater, and it makes a huge difference in terms of how you can play. There is a bull case for the Canucks' defensive game, for, like, the, you know, in our mind's eye version of what Canucks hockey looks like with the wedge in the neutral zone and the forechecking, where, you know, when Lafferty and Mikheyev come in for Podkolzin and Besser, you can even argue that this might be the fastest possible iteration of the Canucks forward group that this team can put out there. And given the way that, I want to be so clear here, that's not to say that this team is better off without.
No.
Like, Besser is a necessity for this team.
But I know what you're saying is, like, okay, having already suffered the blow and the thing you didn't want to happen,
correct,
how do you make the best of it? And one of the ways you make the best of it is, okay, Lafferty is a fast player. He's
right.
coming into the lineup.
And
Mikheyev's a
fast player.
And he's coming into the lineup.
And actually, this is now our fastest possible forward group, right? You know, this is, like, our 12 fastest skaters all in the lineup at once in a series in which, when Vancouver has controlled play, it's been driven by their forecheck, right? I feel like there's been very few, if you think about Canucks' goals in the series, been very few rush opportunities, right? Been very few Canucks getting clean, right? And
mm-hmm.
and get set up opportunities. A lot of it has been counterattacking, counterpunching, either in the neutral zone or on the forecheck. When Vancouver's forechecking game has played, when they've gotten home, they've been able to control play 5-on-5. That, to me, that's like the question of this game. If the Oilers get out clean the way they did in game five, you know, where like right off the
game
first
six.
Sorry, what did I say?
Game five.
Excuse me. Where Darnell Nurse, like right off the opening draw, you have that Darnell Nurse controlled entry. You had Cody Ceci with like really hard center lane drives through the neutral zone. You had Cody Ceci controlled entries in game six. You had the Edmonton defense really aggressively joining the play, and time again, the Oilers were able to get set up and get out of their end clean. If that happens tonight, the path for Vancouver to win gets even narrower, right? Which isn't to say it doesn't exist. This is game seven. Weird things happen. But if they can get that forechecking game going, like, to me, that's the central... It's been the central matchup, frankly, at 5-on-5 of this entire series, but it takes on a special level of sort of like severity or importance going into tonight.
Well, I think especially when you think about without Brock Besser, is one of the Canucks' best options for offense, like forcing the massive turnover, forcing the big giveaway, the big blunder from Edmonton's defense, mm-hmm. right? That puts the puck all of a sudden in a great spot from you. And the best way to do that is with the forecheck.
Yeah. And look, we talk a lot about process on this show, mm-hmm. right? I think we don't react very much to results sometimes, right? Because we're more looking at form. We're more looking at like what matters, right? What's going to matter in a game like tonight?
Mm-hmm.
And now you get here and the maximum number of games left that the Canucks could possibly play this season is 15. The minimum is one, right? There is, it is a massive swing, and process means nothing tonight. Right? Process means nothing. One game. You can win one game with a deflection off a skate. You can win one game because your opponent hits a post in a key 2-on-1. You can win one game because a weird call happens or a major penalty swings the entire game. You are at the point where absolutely, unequivocally, with or without Brock Besser, with or without Thatcher Demko, anything can happen. Okay? And by the way, not just for one game. Anything can happen over 15. The Ted Nolan Buffalo Sabres won 11 of 15 at one point, and they're one of the worst teams that's ever been built in the cap era. The San Jose Sharks had a stretch of 15 games where they won 10. Like, we are there. The Canucks have gotten themselves to a point where as big a blow as Besser is, anything kind of can happen. And I think there's sort of a lesson in how this series has unfolded, in that very good teams win big games, okay? But great ones don't play them, okay? Great ones, like Vegas last year, never got to a game seven.
Mm-hmm.
Colorado, when they won the cup, never got to a game seven, right? The Canucks missed a shot, obviously, over the weekend in Edmonton, and they played badly, getting, you know, lit up on the scoreboard by a 5-1 scoreline. And frankly, like, that was a full value Oilers blowout. And then you come home for game seven, and what awful luck to lose Besser, right? It's like, next time for this team, as this team continues this journey of sort of incrementally leveling up toward the big goal here, you know, both game five in the Nashville series and game six in the Edmonton series, this team missed a shot to end their opponent, right? That's something that they can draw from. But the shoe's also on the other foot, right?
Very much so, yeah.
The Oilers came into this series as overwhelming favorites to win, right? Like 70%+ implied probability. They had a goalie meltdown. They've played lackadaisical hockey far too frequently in their own end of the ice. They haven't consistently been able to get to their game. I'd say the Canucks haven't either, right? That's sort of been one of the interesting features of this series is, I think, with illness ravaging both teams on occasion and injuries piling up to key players, you know, I don't think either team has consistently been able to find their game, and that might be determinative tonight as well. Anyway. The Oilers haven't played like a great team in this series. They are gettable in so many ways, from Stuart Skinner on out.
Mm-hmm.
The way they close games. Like, watching game six, as badly as Vancouver was performing, as lopsided as the scoreline was, at what point did you actually think they're not doing it tonight?
Like 10 minutes left?
I'd say 10 minutes left, yeah. When the score was 4-1,
yeah.
And the Canucks had 10 shots on goal.
Because if they had got the random bounce with like 12 minutes left and it's 4-2, you're on like 6-on-5 watch then, you know what I mean? You're like, uh-oh, here we go.
Here we go.
Yeah.
We know, like, that's part of the weirdness of the playoffs. This team can close. they have that sort of baseline of defensive ability where teams very rarely do what the Oilers did to them in game six and take their 2-0 advantage and make it 3-0 or make it 4-0, right? There's a lot of attributes of this Canucks team that are going to make them very tough to kill. We've seen it all playoffs long. We're going to see it tonight, one way or another. The Canucks can win this series. And I'm telling you right now, if they get through this series, there's short enough runway, right? Do I think Dallas is a truth serum team? I do. Will I be picking the Stars if Vancouver advances? Almost certainly, especially in the wake of the Besser injury.
Yep.
Is there a case to be made that this Canucks team, especially if they get Demko back and get the goaltending and keep playing defense like this and are bigger and more annoying and faster on the forecheck and find this there? Yes. Like, there are stakes tonight. There are stakes tonight. They are massive. We are absolutely late enough in now that there's no process indicators that matter. It's win. That's all. It's win. That's all. No process. Anything truly can happen when the runway gets this short. And that's fun as heck.
It's exciting. It's going to be really, really exciting. To close out the whiteboard, I want to talk more about just like the dynamic around both teams going into this game seven and kind of the fans' perspective and what it means in the next segment.
Can I touch on it through the gambling odds?
Okay, sure. Because I was going to say, let's get into the gambling odds, because even it's a one game thing. They're without Brock Besser. But I think you had it quoted in your Athletic piece, like it's still, what, a 42% implied probability for the Canucks to win?
It's actually moved a little further. The Canucks are currently plus 140 underdogs at home. The implied probability of that's like 41%, 42%. So it's moved like another half percentage point.
For considering this team was, what, like 35% implied probability to win the series?
Yep.
And now they're without Brock Besser and it's down to one game. Like, that illustrates a degree of what we're talking about here, where the odds makers realize like it's one game. You know what
100%.
I mean? So, yeah, you bump the needle a little bit to Edmonton, but it's impossible to bump the needle too much because it's game seven on home ice for the Canucks.
So, but here is something I want to talk about, which is, yes, you're right. The Oilers have only a sub 60% implied probability of advancing tonight. The over-under is set at six. I mean, you know, a game seven, if you're betting an over in a game seven, good luck to you. Now it's going to be a high-scoring affair, but, like, good luck to you.
You're hoping for a Pacers-type shooting performance. That's what you're hoping for in a game seven.
By the way, I'd add that more bets are on the Canucks currently per MGM Sportsbook PR, but more of the handle is on the Oilers, which is what you'd expect, right? The favorites getting bigger bets in, but more people like the spice of an underdog, especially a scrappy underdog that's gotten this series to this point. Now, here's the thing that I actually want to highlight here, because this line hasn't actually moved since the Besser injury. So this is a futures market that has not been impacted by Besser. This is what it was like before. Now, this is the win outright market. So this is to win the Stanley Cup. Going into the Final Four, the Florida Panthers are favored at plus 240. The Dallas Stars at plus 250. The New York Rangers at plus 320. And the Edmonton Oilers at plus 370. What do you think the Canucks number is?
The Oilers are plus 370, plus 550.
1,200.
Wow.
Okay, so the market believes that the Canucks can win tonight. They do not believe that they can win the Stanley Cup.
Yep.
And that line, again, I was checking it all day because I found it so fascinating, was unaltered by the Besser news. In no way did that line move because of Besser being, you know, effectively out indefinitely, even though Rick Tocchet wouldn't provide a specific update on timeline today. So I do think that speaks to some of what I'm talking about, right? Very good teams, and I think the Canucks are a very good team. Win big games. Great teams don't play them, right? And even as this series has unfolded, like, one thing that's been interesting is after any Oilers win, no one says, for example, the Oilers did a great job shutting down JT Miller. After every Canucks win, the story is the Canucks did a great job shutting down. You know what I mean? Like, there's still like the aggressor and the foil dynamic going on. There's still space for this Canucks team to improve. Vegas is still very skeptical that this is an inner circle contender. We're seeing that with how this is priced. Steam, baby. Steam engine. But none of that matters if you can knock out the Oilers. And none of that matters if Thatcher Demko can get back, right? So let's enjoy tonight. it's going to be a ton of fun.
It's game seven. It's the Canucks. It's the Oilers. It's a chance to advance to the Western Conference Finals. We will continue to break it down. Talk about what the Canucks need to do to win. Get your thoughts as well. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line, so hit us up. How you feeling? What are you expecting to see tonight? And we'll talk a little bit about the stakes for both teams going into this one. That's coming up next here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.